go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome everyone to this week's episode of Deep Space High Podcast, where we break down the latest and maybe not so greatest from today's sci-fi television. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris. Good thing you remembered this time.
Yeah, I forgot last time, somehow, some way.
I knew one of us was going to do that eventually. I just thought it was going to be me, not you.
Well, it is what it is.
So what's going on, brother, on this interesting Valentine's Day?
Yeah, very interesting Valentine's Day. We decided to record. The Dallas-Fort Worth area got some snow, which is nice. I think we got some ice and some parts of town got snow a couple months ago, but I think this is the first time the whole Metroplex has been covered in snow.
Oh, in a while. Apparently, it's not even just the whole Metroplex. Apparently, this is the first time in state history that all 250-something counties in the state of Texas has a severe snowstorm warning. So it's the entire state of Texas, Arkansas, and Oklahoma is dealing with that storm.
I'll have to look at that, because that's, I mean, some of our states go really far south and really, you know, hug the coast. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's why it's so impressive. I saw it on before the show on Twitter. I was looking at one of your senator's tweets, and he posted that, I mean, it was just the entire state is covered. It's insane.
Yeah, yeah, we got a cool. I know for these northerners, like Minnesotans, and if anyone's listening out of the Northeast, you know, our temperature right now is only 16 degrees, but it feels like minus -4.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for some
of those folks up there, it's nothing.
Oh, yeah, because in Minnesota right now, because Dad's up in Minnesota, he was telling me it was minus 40 degrees for today. Yeah. So, I mean,
and that's nothing.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful, beautiful 69 degrees out here in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Except for yesterday. Yesterday was fucking crazy. So we had huge gusts of wind and a storm just came out of nowhere. It was a beautiful, sunny, not a cloud in the sky. And then I go for a bike ride, and then I see clouds coming over Mount Charleston. The next thing I know, it's starting to rain, and those clouds were already over us. The winds ended up getting up to 75 miles per hour. We had pole lines, walls, everything, just trees crashing down. So I even heard one news story of some kids were playing in a bounce house, and the bounce house blew into the next door neighbor's tree. And they were stuck in the bounce house. Now, luckily, they were okay, but, I mean,
jeez.
Yeah, Mother Nature was having her way with everybody yesterday. Yeah, or these past couple of days.
Yeah, we got some snow. It's been flurrying pretty much ever since I've been up, which is like 8 o'clock Central Standard Time. And it's, you know, close to 4 o'clock Central Standard Time in the afternoon. So it's not snowing hard. It's just little flurries trickling down. Just at a constant rate.
So not enough.
It's nice. First time I've seen snow. No,
you didn't want to build a snowman.
Do you want? It's not even sticky. It's just it's like a dry snow.
Is it?
So like we went out and tried to make a snowball and it doesn't stick together. So it's just it's not wet and sticky.
Yeah, that's. I guess you got to wait a little bit longer. Does it have to sit for it to start, you know, getting sticky, or is that just kind of? That's one of the.
I don't know.
I'm not much of a meteorologist, but that was one of the things that's always kind of confused me. Why some instances snow is sticky and some instances is not. So I don't know.
I don't know.
If we have any meteorologists or anybody who knows anything about the weather listening, feel free to leave us a comment. Let us know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. I say that's enough about the weather, and let's get into what we're covering this episode.
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it.
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it.
I'm gonna go do it.
Yeah, we have interesting conversation coming your way. We're talking about episode 7, The Light of Shadows, episode 8, If Memory Serves, and episode 9, Project Daedalus of season 2 of Star Trek Discovery. And these were a very interesting set of episodes.
Yes, and for the record, the memory did not serve.
No.
No. Okay. So it was just a bad joke. All right. So yeah, these were actually, I actually thought these were the best 3 episodes so far in all of Discovery.
Yeah, it was very, very intense and good. You know, there were sometimes I wish they could just stick to a singular storyline for an entire episode, but I know they have multiple storylines going. But well, it's like it'll pull you away from something, and not necessarily in a bad way, but.
Yeah, but at least we're starting to see more character development, more, you know, story arcs within the characters. You're starting to get a little bit more of a chemistry between the crew, or better chemistry, I should say, between the crew and the audience, where they struggled with that in the first season. So, I mean, it's a lot of information and it's a lot of different storylines, but they're at least getting better.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we'll start with episode 7, and this kind of kicks it all off, where Brenham informs Pike, where she informs Pike that she needs to take some leave and go to Vulcan and see her parents, and, you know, kind of tell him without telling him that she's going to go find Spock or search for Spock still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is a very... You know, it's the first time we're seeing Spock. We've seen younger him in flashbacks, but now we're finally seeing old adult Spock. Bearded Spock.
I'm not going to lie, but I like that quip Brenham had. It was later in, I think it was actually in the next episode, but I like that quip she had about the beard. That was funny.
Yeah, it's in the next one. But yeah, she did have a little, you think that beard's working for you? I was like, I don't mind the Spock beard.
It was funny because he was, you know, questioning, oh, are you going to have any insightful comments that's going to, you know, help her? She's like, oh, and you think that beard's actually work for you? I'm like, oh, that was actually a good burn. Yeah. that was a good one.
Yeah, there was another funny moment, which we'll get there when we get there.
There was a couple funny moments.
But we could talk about episode 7.
Yeah, I like that they're adding more humor. They're adding a lot more humor and a lot more... It's not as dry and as serious as the first season was, which is nice because Star Trek's, although it, you know, everybody thinks it's boring and lame and it's just a bunch of pseudoscience and people talking, there's actually a lot of subtle humor in all the shows that's very funny, and I'm glad they kind of return to that in these couple of episodes.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, let's get into this episode.
Yeah, so in this episode, you know, Brenham returns to Vulcan. And I think it was interesting that you see that she has to get clearance to land and at, you know, Ambassador Sarek's place. And she has to clarify that she's not on Starfleet business because I guess they would have to go through a different channel. She's like, no, I'm just here as his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So they grant him permission. I found that kind of interesting that.
Well, I mean, he is an ambassador to Earth, so.
Yeah. And the point I was going to make was it was. It's odd that he has his own pad and can just kind of accept, you know, because what if she was there on Starfleet business? How much of a different channel would she have to go on?
I don't know. I mean, technically she was kind of there for Starfleet business, so maybe it's just an easy way to lie and circumvent it, or a nice little loophole that she's got there, given that she has family.
So say if it was Pike, you know, make an appearance and, you know, wasn't a relative, what channel would he have to go through to get a seat at the table with Sarek?
I'm not sure. Maybe going through the embassy, perhaps?
Probably. Some sort of diplomatic channels.
Yeah, if it's still around. Because, I mean, they did kind of blow it up in Enterprise. So, but then again, that was like 100 years prior to this. So,
yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah, so this is interesting because she doesn't really receive a very welcoming return home since Amanda, her foster mother, adoptive mother, is still pissed at her from previous episodes.
What did she do in the previous? I don't remember what she did that pissed her off, though. Because I don't remember her being pissed off.
Yeah, she Brenner pissed her off. She said something about Spock, and I don't know. She Amanda found something. I don't remember exactly off the top of my head, but she was pissed at her, and you could see she's still pissed in this episode.
Mm. I must have just been stoned and missed it. I knew she was pissed in this episode, but it seemed more like less pissed, more concerned for, you know, not wanting Brenner to take Spock, given that he's wanted for murder.
Yeah, and then Brenner had to play the whole, wouldn't you rather me find him than, you know, Section 31 or anyone else in Starfleet?
Well, Section 31 probably would have just killed him, so yeah. I mean, that's a good argument. Yeah.
But yeah, there was a conversation, I don't remember at the end of which episode, but yeah, Brenner said something to piss her off, and she's still mad at Brenner.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's the one where she came on Discovery and stole the holo information, or not the holo information, the medical records. I'm assuming it was that episode. I just don't remember the scene. So, but
I don't remember it entirely. I just know Brenner kind of blames herself for something. I don't know. We'll move on since apparently don't very well.
It was funny. What did you think of the Vulcan marital dispute? Because that's what a fight looks like in a Vulcan marriage. Between
where one is just really rational and calm and the other is pissed off and angry.
Pretty much. I mean, that's, yeah. Kind of. Well, I mean, he wasn't really rational and calm. He wasn't really rational and calm. He got a little heated for a Vulcan.
Testy.
Yeah. For a Vulcan. But yeah, that's essentially what it looks like. And he didn't seem too happy to find out that, you know, she was harboring Spock.
Yeah, because Amanda, I don't remember how she said, or Spock came to her.
Well,
yeah, I think that, whatever. I don't remember how it explained how she ended up finding Spock, or how I think Spock ended up finding her, and then she hid him in some catacombs that was able to block this meditation that Sarek was performing called Takmar.
Yeah,
because of the special material makeup of those catacombs or whatever it was.
Yeah, and so then I'm referring to Amanda in this point. She tried to use the claim that because
diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, of diplomatic immunity to protect Spock from being arrested for the murder charges, but that's only if the ambassador goes along with it, which it did not appear he was going to. Then they ended up
One of the things, yeah. And Sarek suggests that Michael turn both of themselves over to Section 31.
Which was not the right call. Sorry, Sarek. But we...
No.
A little foreshadowing there, but we find out that that was actually not the right call.
No, and then another storyline if that's happening on the Discovery is... the Discovery is kind of in this temporal...
Anomaly.
Distortion type thing. Anomaly, yeah, where they're kind of caught up. And Pike and Tyler have to go fly a shuttle into it and send some probes, and then their own probe attacks them.
So, but, typical Star Trek stuff.
You know, plot twist. The probe aged 500 years, or was from 500 years in the future with some pretty crazy modifications.
Ooh, so this should be important to some more foreshadowing. So 500 years, based off of this timeline, would be around mid-28th century. Which, a little more foreshadowing for potentially season 3, actually, is right smack dab in the middle of the temporal Cold War, which is related to Star Trek Enterprise. So, just a little fun fact for you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a little fun fact. But, yeah, I mean, I was thinking about it, and the storyline with Pike and Tyler is interesting because... You know, there's a lot going on, and of course, who's going to be the, you know, they get caught in that time loop. They don't know when or even where they are, so the Discovery kind of loses them. Then, of course, because Stamets is kind of living outside of normal linear time, he's able to beam onto the ship and kind of save them. But I like how you start to see just how much distrust Pike has for Tyler.
Well, yeah, I mean, he killed the crewman, and he was a former Klingon, and he was with Section 31, so he has lots of reasons to not trust this guy.
Yeah, and you see that it kind of builds. They, you know, Pike gains a little more trust after this mission of him, but is still extremely skeptical of anything he does or says, especially in the following episodes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, even going into that, you know, it's not just with him. I think it's more towards Section 31 in particular, and him being a proxy for Section 31 is just doesn't help. You know, I think that this distrust comes from Section 31, not necessarily just Tyler at that point.
Yeah, it's probably a little combination of both.
Yeah, I think in this episode, I think the, you know, not having any knowledge of, you know, what was going on with Tyler prior, because they never went over what happened with, you know, Tyler and Brenham. They never went much into the backstory. So I think in this episode, it was a little bit of both, but I think kind of going forward, it was more Section 31. So,
yeah, but that was it was an intriguing storyline, but it was in the shadows of the main storyline where, you know, you finally see Spock and then, you know, he's kind of losing it where he's rambling off what seems like random numbers. And Amanda's like, I've searched these numbers. There's nothing in the database, no coordinates, no nothing. And he's rambling off Alice. I think it's Alice in Wonderland because Amanda used to read that to them as kids. So he's just kind of, he's losing his sanity.
Yeah, I think they said that he used that as tested. I think didn't they say that they use Alice in Wonderland as like to set the foundation for his logic, or that I don't remember the exact line.
It sounded like that he uses that to kind of ground himself with logic on his humanity side.
Yeah, and I'm curious why she chose Alice in Wonderland though. I mean, I do get the idea of a way of thinking when up is down and down is up and logic doesn't make any sense. But I mean, there's a lot of other stories.
Yeah, that's probably the whole reason. It's about a person being lost and outside the norm. And that kind of fits both of those people very well. Mm-hmm. And it might have just been a favorite book of hers as a kid. Hers is in Amanda.
Could be. I've never actually read it, so nor have I seen a movie of
No, that book came out, at least 100 years ago.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not, it's beyond the,
1865. Yeah, it's in the public domain.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Because isn't it, 75 years for public domain? Or before it can enter the public domain?
It keeps changing. It used to be like 60, but and the big influence here is Disney because they don't want to lose the copyright to Mickey Mouse, but they are on the verge of it because it is like it's like 70 years or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a whole other debate that I would actually not mind getting into on whether or not, you know, Disney should have the authority or, you know, we should change these public domain laws, but that's a debate for a whole nother.
Yeah, that's a horse of a different color.
Yeah, exactly.
But back to Trek. I just think it was a fan favorite of hers. As I mentioned earlier, Sarek did suggest that he take, or that Brenham takes Spock to Section 31, since that's who's looking for him. And maybe, you know, they'll be more accepting versus if you turn it over to a regular Federation ship. So that's what happened.
Well, Giorgio, do you know the captain that is serving over her? I don't remember his name. Captain
Leland.
Leland, thank you. Okay. So it seems like Giorgio and Leland are kind of butting heads a little bit on who really is calling the shots. And it seems like Giorgio is getting very ambitious and is trying to overtake Leland. So do you think that this was more out of concern, you know, helping her was more a concern for helping Giorgio, or does she actually care about Brenham and Spock? Or is it just kind of a best of both worlds?
Well, that's where she said when she plotted the jailbreak and she told Brenham that, you know, they're not doing what they say. It's pretty much, they're going to use a memory extractor on Spock and cause a lot of harm. And I think because Brenham was her adoptive daughter in her universe, she still cares about Brenham, and because Brenham cares about Spock, she does what's best, you know, or what's good for her. And what's good for her makes Leland look bad, which is also good for Giorgio. So Giorgio's, because she's, and it, we see it in these episodes, she's really playing the game of let's make Leland look as bad as possible so I can take over this ship for Section 31. She's trying to move up in the ranks by sabotaging her superiors.
Yeah, I mean, which makes sense because she was the emperor of an entire galaxy. Like, I think they pretty much conquered most of the known galaxy in the Terran Empire, because you often hear her referring to her experiences when she was dealing with, you know, in the Terran Empire, because...
With everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well...
Because she's dealt a little with the Klingons, dealt a little with this, dealt a little with the Talosians or the Talos IV people, which we'll talk about, which is next episode, so...
Right.
Yeah, she's dabbled in just about any species, and Leland even makes a comment, if you knew this was going to possibly happen, why didn't you tell me? She had some smart aleck remark saying, I just want to make you look bad or some shit like that.
No, I think it was, I wanted to see the look on your face when you explain this to the admirals.
Yeah, something like that. Which is, you know, I paraphrased.
Yeah. But
said what she was thinking.
I mean, she's doing a great job adapting to the situation, because she's not as ruthless as she was with the Terran Empire. You know, she could, honestly, she probably
well,
could
she
just,
kind of.
You were saying?
Could what? I was going to say she has to adapt. She knows it's a different way of life over here, so she can't be as cutthroat and ruthless as she would be in her home universe, but you could still see it there.
But is it a means to an end? Like, is she doing it to gain power and control, so that way when she has the power and control, she can, you know, kind of return it to her style, her way of doing things, especially if she gets power in Section 31?
Maybe if we ever get that Section 31 show that's been rumored to come out for a long, long time, maybe we'll find out a little more.
Maybe. I mean, there are interesting storylines that they can go on for these. The problem is I still have that same fundamental problem that I've spoke about with Section 31 in previous episodes. Nobody's even supposed to know they exist. And it really does bother me that the level of... what's the right word? Familiarity, I guess, that everybody seems to have with Section 31. Everyone knows what Section 31 is. It's a, you know, everybody, you know, it was supposed to be a top secret classified organization that literally no one knows about. Like,
no.
Almost like, I'm trying to think of a good example. Maybe like Delta Force? For our comparison, we know that Delta Force exists, but we really know nothing about it. And that's kind of what Section 31 is supposed to be.
I was thinking about that, and there's this... actually, to go off on a brief tangent, but it's there. There's this government agency that's like the CIA. It's an intelligence gathering agency it exists, but it doesn't really exist, or people don't really know anything about it. Like, you can go on and you could find their website, but other than that, you don't know much about it. Now, I didn't dive too much into it, so it was just kind of a quick thought off the head.
Yeah, because I mean,
a quick research.
Because Section 31 was a part of the Starfleet Charter, not the Federation Charter, which Starfleet actually predates the Federation. So this organization is supposed to be under the total control and authority of Starfleet, not the Federation. Which makes sense why they have this council of admirals that seems to be kind of running the show with the Section 31, which, again, skipping ahead a little bit because this is next couple episodes, but I don't know. It's just there's a lot of contradictions in what they're doing here to what the other storylines say, and it bothers me. But it could be remedied if they get a good storyline with that Section 31 show. But they gotta get a good. They gotta get a good story.
It could be something to where it was really known, and then after the events of everything that's happening in Discovery, it went off the books and like officially dissolved, but they still operate in the shadows, kind of thing. So it's there, but people may not know about it, which is why in Deep Space High, it's as secreted as it is. If that makes sense.
Yes, and Deep Space Nine, we're Deep Space High.
Oh, oops, did it again?
Okay. Yeah, it's okay.
Oh well, but the end. This episode ends where Brenham does escape the Section 31 ship, and she plugs in the numbers that Spock was saying, but in reverse, because we find out that Spock had a Vulcan type dyslexia as a child, and he would see things or say things kind of in a backwards way, kind of like dyslexics do here on Earth. So she plugged him in backwards, and then bada boom, bada bing, she got the coordinates to Talos IV.
Right. And then, which goes into episode 8, which I actually thought was pretty cool. So when she was, when they were flying in to the coordinates, they pop in on a black hole, not a planet. And I know we can get into the details about,
well, you know, before you get there,
or, well, I just wanted to actually talk about how impressive that CGI was for that black hole. Like, that was,
oh yeah, yeah, like it looked good.
That was movie quality up to
movie
the
quality.
I think the only black hole I've ever seen that was created, you know, CGI wise, was probably Interstellar, and I think that was near comparable to Interstellar. And Interstellar, I think, was the closest man-made recreation to what we'd think a black hole looks like prior to actually seeing one for the first time, which is still awesome. But,
yeah.
But I think you were right, Steve.
What did you think of that opening? I was right about what?
That we should probably get a little bit more information about Talos IV, a little bit more background into it.
Well, where I was heading was the introduction. You know how they do those previously on Discovery moments, but this was a previously on Star Trek, and it kind of gave a quick overview of the original series pilot episode where Pike was introduced.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad they did. And I actually rewatched that. I haven't really told you guys, the audience, but I'm rewatching all of the Star Trek, and I do it every year at the start of the year. And I go in order from OG to Next Generation to Deep Space Nine, Voyager. You know, I go in order. So I started watching the pilot like a couple of days ago. So it was really nice seeing that recap and then being able to have that connection going back to for the original pilot and to be able to compare and contrast. Because I was curious, you know, when doing that, does that mean that the storyline is after the events of Talos IV, where we get the pilot of Enterprise, or was it before? And that was kind of one of the questions that I had. It looks like you had the same question based off of the notes.
Yeah, I did, and
we find out it was after.
And that, yes, you do, because so, he sees what's her face again,
Vina. So it turns out. So then, is that what the Enterprise was doing on its mission during the war? I mean, this was because remember?
No, I don't know because this. I mean, I don't know how recently this Talos IV incident is, because I mean, I'm not entirely familiar with the original series. I've seen all of season one and episodes sprinkled throughout 2 and 3, but I don't know how much of a time jump there is in between.
It's supposed to be
episode 2,
years.
But I know. Well, yeah, and I know, you know, they. Like, when the pilot was made, there were some things they liked about it. They didn't really like the cast. That's why we have Kirk instead of Pike. And you weren't really supposed to see because it never aired until, you know, I think years later.
Well, I think the actor who played Pike originally died. Because they brought back the Pike storyline in season 2, I think. And then we're going to find out about it in later episodes because that's one of the things I do remember that they go into that. But we're going to find out more in season 2. And it's a different actor who plays Pike when he becomes crippled. And I think I remember looking up that the actor who played Pike originally passed away. So I think that's why they kind of went with the change of direction. And then... Yeah, I think it's several years because Spock was supposed to be a lieutenant at the time, and then he is currently a lieutenant now, so, and then he becomes a commander by the time that Kirk rolls around. So he jumped up 2 ranks from lieutenant commander to a commander. So it's got to be several years.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think Discovery takes place 10 years before the original series, at least before Kirk's, you know, time on the Enterprise, so... I mean, we're looking somewhere between 7 and 10 years before that. Oh, it's just interesting.
But it was, you know, I mean, another interesting thing, and I noticed this when I rewatched it. You know the Number One from Enterprise. She came on board on Discovery. Well, the original actress who played Number One was actually the wife of Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek. Yeah, she also was the voice of the computer in Next Generation. She was also played Loxana Troi, mother of Deanna Troi on Next Generation.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that was her. So I just thought that was interesting. Wanted to point that out. That might be why they did that special scene with her coming on board, was just kind of to honor her because she passed away recently. So.
Makes sense.
Sorry.
Makes sense.
Keep tangenting
but,
a lot.
But, no, yeah.
But they're good tangents. I mean, they're related to the episode, in a sense.
Yeah, but speaking of the episode, so very, very interesting. We see the big heads. I don't know how to say Talothian or whatever.
Talosians.
So I'm referring to them as big heads.
That works.
So Spock brought Benham. God damn, I can't talk. He brought Brenham to Talos IV because he's well aware of their telepathic abilities and feels that they are the most qualified to handle kind of piecing him back together and bringing back his sanity, because they explain that Spock is experiencing time as a fluid instead of as a linear timeline, yeah. Which, for those who don't know, being fluid is, and he sums this up best. He goes, "How is it that I can remember tomorrow?"
Yeah,
and that's kind of he's experiencing different times at different moments, which is
right.
You know, not normal. And I think Brenham even refers to, I don't remember if it was this episode or in the seventh episode, where if he was full Vulcan, this would have drove him completely insane already. So it's his half human side that's kind of grounding him. And, you know, while he still looks pretty
insane
and losing it, and he, you know, it could be a lot worse if it was like Sarek.
Oh yeah. That's probably true. I mean, yeah, I thought this was interesting because the way that we look at time, when they say linear, we see it as a straight line. So we have the past, we have the present, which we're constantly living in, and we have the future, which we will eventually get to. And the way that I was kind of explained it, and the way that I think of it, is use a basically like a ribbon strip. And if you're traveling and you connect the two ends of the strips and tape it together to where it's basically forms a circle, and if you were to draw a straight line along the strip, and you were to go from that perspective, in your mind, you never change. It's constant. There's no movement. But when you actually look at the strip, in order for it to be connected, it's very twisted and turning, and you end up going on several different sides. And that's kind of how, a way that we perceive time. So for Spock, the strip is kind of jumbled up, cut up in confetti, is now all over the place, which is why he's losing control of his mind, because now we're taken out of that. Our brain doesn't have that understanding of anything beyond linear time, because it's all we've ever experienced. So that's probably so that's why he's going insane. And it's this is more for the audience, but you know, I really like that that they at least explained it a little bit. But I have previous background knowledge in science, in this, because I've researched it before. So it was really nice that they actually had a scientific and a semi-intelligent means of going about this. But that's what they mean when they say that they're perceiving time not as something linear, but something fluid. Yeah. I don't know if that actually made any sense for any of you guys, but I really hope it did. But that's kind of what they mean behind it.
So there was a lot of stuff that happened while Brenham and Spock were on Talos IV, because the big heads had a show Brenham what Spock was experiencing, his first encounter with the Red Angel, his time at the psychiatric hospital when he supposedly murdered people. So he sees all that, she sees all that. And in order for them to do that for her, they wanted to experience some of the traumatic memories that she had with Spock, and why there's so much tension and anger between the two of them.
Yeah, that was one of the things that actually confused me, because when watching the original pilot, the big heads, as you like to refer to them as, they did not really value or respect human life. They considered them more like lower species, similar to the way that we perceive dogs or apes. You know, they considered, I mean, they even held them in cage and anthropomorph, you know what I'm trying to say. God damn it, I can't even say it. Neither one of us can speak today. Holy shit. They were talking to him without acknowledging that he was there, without acknowledging his conscience or his presence. And he was even describing the reactions almost to the point of animal-like behavior. So to see them be so respectful and honest and ask permission and do these things, it's like, but that was a little bit different to their, you know, persona in the pilot. So that was one of the criticisms that I had.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the pilot, they learned a lot, because in the pilot, they kind of breach the computer's memory system and kind of get a rundown of human history. And they say in the pilot, hey, humans, even in the best ways possible, despise slavery.
In captivity. Oh, yeah.
And being in captivity. No, and that could be why we see a change in their temperament towards humans.
Could be. I mean, originally, I think they were hoping to repopulate their planet, because they explain it a little bit, but their planet was destroyed by nuclear warfare from their past. Now that I'm thinking about it, is Talos IV Planet of the Apes 2? Have you seen the original Planet of the Apes from 1960? Seen the second one, right?
Yes.
Do you remember the second one where they had that intelligent, or all the human beings were super intelligent, and they had a nuke, and they nuked their own planet, and they were worshiping a nuke? It kind of seems like a similar...
It's been like 10 years since I've seen it, so I don't remember.
Yeah, I mean, same. It was just something I noticed. So... Like, were they playing off of that when they were doing Star Trek? They're ripping off Planet of the Apes.
I don't know. We're getting sidetracked.
I know, but...
So, but in this episode, you know, we learn Giorgio's talking to some of the admirals, Giorgio and Leland, and Giorgio suggests pretty much putting out a bolo for Brenham and Spock, because Brenham committed another mutiny in the last episode when she, quote-unquote, attacked and escaped from Giorgio. With Spock to save him from whatever torture they were going to do. So they put a bolo out, kind of excluding the Discovery, because they want the Discovery to stay and do more data gathering on whatever probe attacked them in the previous episode. And we didn't mention this when we were talking about last episode, but Tyler was getting kind of bold and testy, where he was trying to demand information out of Pike. He wanted to know why Brenham was going on leave, and Pike was like, it's personal, I'm not going to tell you. He's like, if she's searching for Spock, I need to know. And he throws his badge at Pike, and Pike's like, hey, this badge means nothing compared to the chair.
Yeah,
get in the chair and then we can talk.
Chair outranks badge.
Yeah, that was exactly what he said. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in these episodes, Tyler is just real, real testy. And he's like demanding information. And he comes onto the bridge, or he's already on the bridge when Pike's on Talos IV. And everyone looks at him like he's crazy, because after the events of the pilot, you know, Talos IV became a very restricted and off limits.
Oh, it's
part of the Alpha Quadrant.
It's the only place... law or rule to which the death penalty still applies. So if you go to this planet, you would be sentenced to death by the Federation. It's the only instance left in the entire Federation, if I haven't reiterated that enough.
So Pike tried to jump there, but they find out that their spore drive is sabotaged and their ship's not quite functioning, so they have to warp there, which ends up, you know, someone informs Section 31, which causes Section 31 to follow them there, causes this whole dispute.
Right, well, which everybody I thought thinks ended that.
Quite cleverly.
Well, everybody thought Tyler did it. So they kind of...
Yeah, they even confined him to quarters, thinking, because they were sending encrypted messages to Section 31 headquarters. They all suspected Tyler because it had his confirmation codes and his, you know, whatever codes he had to use. Mm-hmm. So they thought it was him. Pike said, lock him up.
Yep.
But it wasn't, which we'll find out
in the next episode. But
we kind of suspect who it is because,
well,
we know.
The audience knows, but they don't know.
Yeah.
Because we saw I think it was the end of episode 7. Once that probe, when dealing with that temporal anomaly, we see, what's her name? The blue chick, robot chick, who's always Arium. Kind of in it. Arium. Well, we finally figure out what her name is. And it turned, you know, you see her eyes kind of flash red, which kind of indicates that she's been taking control. You know, like something's infiltrated her.
By control.
Yeah. I know, right? This was actually the first episode we hear them mention control. I think they mentioned it for the first time in this one. Let's see. Because I know I wrote it down.
So what is control?
Well, from what they explain, it appears to be an artificial intelligence which collects data and uses that data to formulate strategy and predictions towards, you know, the Starfleet's higher up. So it recommends new strategies and or plan of attacks or so on and so forth. So, well, I found that interesting.
Because I don't remember it ever being referred to in any other Star Trek series. So I was just curious.
No, this was the first time. They've never mentioned it before, and this was the first episode they mentioned it. So they have not mentioned it in any of these previous episodes. But I thought that was interesting because we already have that technology today. Like, everybody uses AI. Like, Facebook, Google, these major big tech companies, they use AI algorithms all the time to give us better I don't want to say it's better, but they, you know, they're able to pick out our information and our data, what we like, and recommend new content that's similar or identical to what we already like. So, and they don't even have, and it's just all algorithm based. So, I don't know. I thought it was interesting that they're dealing with the same problems or similar problems that we're dealing with today, 400 years in the future.
Yeah.
300.
Yeah. On the other hand, in this episode, there's the storyline with Colbert and Stimmons, where Colbert, he's there, but he's not really there. He doesn't feel like himself. He has memories of the past, but he doesn't feel, there's no emotions connected to him. And we really see Colbert get pissed off to the point where he goes to the mess hall, confronts Tyler, and it leads to a fist fight.
Yeah.
And I like how Saru handled it, because Tilly wanted to break it up, and he was like, no, I think it's best if we let this play out. And so we let the fight ensues. And then the next scene with Pike and Saru talking, Pike's like, well, I heard you didn't break up the fight. He's like, and Saru says he saw it best to just let it play out. And Pike was like, he was skeptical. He goes, that's not really how it works in the conflict resolution handbook that Starfleet provides. And I loved Saru's response. He goes, well, the handbook doesn't really call for a situation for when a Klingon was turned into a human and a former medical doctor was brought back from the dead. So I played it by ear. Yeah. I was like,
I mean, that's a valid
very, very fair. That was the first time I think I've actually busted out laughing.
I know.
When the show for a joke, I was like, it was hilarious because it's true, but he said it in such a funny way.
Honestly, well, for me, the beard, because we passed that part, the beard joke was my favorite. First time that I laughed out loud. That was really funny. But yeah, this one too.
I like the beard joke, but I like Saru's kind of
super
smart ass response, because that's my kind of response.
Yeah, I mean, I like the humor. I like that there's humor now. It's
yeah,
big improvement. We didn't talk about Brenham's flashback with Spock.
Oh, no, we haven't yet.
Yeah, because that
we talk about that now.
Because that scene actually made a lot of sense in my mind. Because...
yeah, it still doesn't answer, because she grew up in the household. So that must have meant, if that was the scene that causes them both pain and why they're so distant, you know, they had to go like another 8 years living together. What was that like?
I don't know.
They couldn't have resolved the differences in between, because, you know, she says stuff that's really hurtful and cause them kind of like a half... breed freak and all this pretty mean stuff to say to a child,
right?
And obviously it would hurt Spock emotionally, given he's half human. It was just one of those, you know, it saves her, you know, she lives there for a while, graduates from the science academy,
Yeah, there's still a lot of couldn't, timeline.
They missing. Couldn't resolve the conflict.
Yeah.
Yeah, they couldn't resolve the conflict in all that time. They consider each other brother and sister, but, you know, it seems like the hate or the anger stems from that one event.
Which, I mean, given...
No, it just seems a little odd.
Well, watching it, I mean, yeah, it kind of makes sense why they would, you know, resent each other and not want to... But, yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, there's several years that they could have. Now, maybe they just held a grudge. You know, Vulcans are... They don't really have emotions, so maybe because they were living on Vulcan, they never really had the opportunity to deal with those emotional problems or tried to resolve those emotional problems, and instead they just suppressed it the entire time. I mean, that would make sense.
Maybe.
You know, trying to...
Maybe, but we're talking about Spock, a child who obviously isn't very good at controlling his emotions yet, because we know Vulcans have them, they suppress them.
Yeah, but remember, he said that he was glad that he did that happened, because that was the foundation which set up, you know, his logic, or that he built his logic off of, or that, you know, that truly made him forego humanity and his emotions and dedicate himself to logic in that moment. So maybe it would make sense that they just suppressed it rather than, you know, confronting it. I mean, Spock even accused Burnham of running from her emotions, trying to deal with, you know, carry too many burdens rather than dealing with the grief of the emotions, you know?
Yeah, very true.
So
very true. So, but this episode ends in a pretty interesting way, to where the big heads trick Section 31, because Section 31 and the Discovery come in a standoff where they both kind of lock onto their coordinates to beam up Spock and Brenham. And it was one of those where,
this
if
was also
they both try to beam them up, it would try to split. It would really destroy
their atoms,
the two of them. So, yeah. So
yeah, that was a first. I've never heard that before, but it makes sense. I will admit that does actually make sense. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, and Pike tried to, you know, Pike had to concede and let Leland take him, but the big heads kind of used their imaginary power to beam an illusion on board.
Vina, yeah. I mean, well, that's what they did to Vina. That was, they didn't actually beam her, Vina was the woman.
No, what I'm saying is, okay, yes, they gave the illusion to Pike, where Vina was saying, trust her to unlock, or, you know.
Yeah, okay, I get what you're saying. I thought you were talking about
to let Leland with Pike. No.
Yeah, okay.
No.
Because that's how they got, that's also how they got convinced Pike to go to Talos IV, was by using their imaginary powers to show Vina again.
Well, one, to show Vina, and then to kind of do a like teleport their consciousness. That way they didn't go through subspace channels and risk detection from Section 31.
That's true, but I also think that she just wanted to see him too.
Well, probably.
I mean, you could tell there was a love connection. I mean, they brought up the love connection. They fell for each other in the pilot, so.
Yeah, we won't get into that, but.
I don't know. Yeah,
they did use her in a big way.
I'll look up the second episode, because there was the original pilot episode, and then there was the episode where Spock kidnaps, you know, crippled Pike and takes him back. And I'll find, I don't remember which episode number it is, but I'll find it real quick, and then I'll let you guys know. So if you want to watch it and the audience wants to watch it, you guys can both watch it for the next episode of Deep Space High, because I think we're going to be going more into it in these next three episodes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so that's how the episode ends. So now the Starfleet, or Discovery, is kind of a fugitive ship, because they have two fugitives on board with Brenham and Spock. And they kind of just, you know, they get out of Dodge, and that's what the next episode is. It's Admiral Cornwallis meeting up with him and trying to figure out what the hell is going on and what all this crap is.
Yeah, and then I hate to say it, I kind of like how he didn't even have to give the big captain speech to get the crew to join him. Like, they were already, yep, let's go. Where are we going? What are we doing?
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, we don't have time for this. where are we going?
Yep. So
they get the hell out of Dodge.
And then, let's see.
So that leads into episode 9, Project Daedalus, where, you know, the first thing we see is, like I said, Cornwallis meeting up or rendezvousing with the Discovery. She gives Spock kind of a lie detector test and determine he's not lying about, you know, murdering these people when he escaped the psych ward.
Sorry, Admiral, don't mean to ruin your day, but lie detector tests are not admissible in a court of law.
Well, this is 200 years from now, so they might be
a little
and
bit
she
more.
Also says she also says, well, he believes he's not lying or he's telling the truth. So it's one of those things where people can beat the lie detector if they really believe in the truth, or, you know, they can deceive.
Well, they look for certain qualities. I think in modern polygraphs, they look for certain responses and
the heart start racing, because usually when you start lying, the heartbeat gets, you know, it's gets rapid,
right? You have a physical response to lying that they can check for. But it's very, if you're very controlled of your body and you're a good liar, you can easily manipulate said lie detector, or you could actually get falsely convicted because you get so afraid and you're so paranoid that the lie detector gets it mixed up. So, but it looks like when they were doing it, they were doing it based off of their brain scans, not based off of physical responses. Because did you notice that they were?
Yeah, it was like they were scanning certain parts of the brain while asking the question, which is a more, you know, sophisticated and probably would be more accurate than today's polygraph, but probably can still be deceived, because she says, you know, she obviously says, well, he believes that he's telling the truth. So she's not entirely convinced he is, because as she brings up, she shows the footage of him murdering those doctors, which we actually get an explanation for in later in this episode.
Yeah, we do.
But I find this episode very interesting, because we get, it's pretty much an Arium backstory, the bluish, grayish, robotic, I guess half cyborg, half human scenario. We find out more about her just for her to, you know, we know she's up to no good because she's under control of the Red Eyes, and not the same one that kills Xboxes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, that was a different generation problem. We don't have to deal with that anymore, thank God.
Yeah.
Man, but if you're old enough to know what a Red Eye is, good for you.
Well, the Red Ring of Death, technically, but it could still apply. So I found it interesting how it was a giant backstory for her. And the crew go to Section 31 headquarters, and mainly because it's almost like Arium's a puppeteer and it's just kind of pulling everyone's strings, because we know she sent the messages. We find out that the head of Section 31 and Andorian? Whoever, the blue guys with the antennas.
Yep, they're Andorians.
Okay, we find out some of them have been dead for a couple weeks, but they had just had a FaceTime meeting, so a lot of sneaky shit going on, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
I don't know. I found this weird. It was a very good episode, but it was weird. They gave so much, not so much, but they gave enough backstory, and you see the relationship between Arium and some of the crewmates. So when it comes to the point and she's trying to upload this data into the Section 31 ship, they had to kill her.
Yeah, they had to eject her out.
I know,
space.
I'm just getting right to the punch, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
After she, I'm like, well,
I really,
I mean,
liked what they
did. Telling Brenham to just
do it, but she's fighting. Yeah, I know.
I said,
I can't do it. I can't do the voice. You need to find the clip and
Pike's
insert it.
Like,
do it. Goes full Emperor Palpatine, yeah.
Yeah.
Neither one of us.
But, Brenham couldn't do it because there was such a strong connection.
Yeah.
And everyone's telling her to do it, Pike, Spock, and finally, I think it's Nall, the chief of security with, what does she have? She has little devices that help her breathe because she can't breathe oxygen.
Yeah, they're adapters.
She finally, after a good fight, you know, she finally pulls the lever on the space dock.
Well, I really like what they did with this episode, because, I mean, they did a really good job building up the character development prior in the episode before getting to this. So it's not like, oh, they're just, you know, killing another red shirt in Star Trek. You know, there's a little bit more feeling and emotion into it because they established a little bit more of a connection. Now, I wish they did it throughout the season, you know, continue to establish. So that way you have more of an impact rather than just the one episode. But I mean, it still did a good job getting that emotional reaction out of it.
Yeah, they didn't quite develop him like the Helm, the redheaded Helm chick, or I can't think of her name.
Owa?
The
Black Girl?
Yeah. I think
that was her name.
Yeah, the Black Girl. Something like that. And, you know, they've built them up over the last, you know, this season and in part of episode one, but you didn't really get Arium's build up. You got a little
tidbits
here and there. You know, she's a robot, but you really learn that she's a human who was in an accident, who had all these cybernetics and everything implanted and added to her to help her live.
Right. Yeah.
So you get all this and then they just pull the airlock on her and be like, oh yeah, we just wanted to tug with your heartstrings a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, that was so interesting because that was one of the things that bothered me, because I couldn't tell if she was actually human or a robot for the longest time, or if she was an attempt at artificial intelligence, but like a artificial life form, android kind of like Data, which would, you know, not make sense given that he was supposed to be the first, even though they do have androids in the original series. It's very confusing, but I don't know. It would have bothered me if they made her an android. So I'm glad that they went with this storyline.
Yeah, it was a cybernetic human.
Right, who had a tragic event.
The Federation's attempt at a Borg.
Essentially, cybernetic life form.
I like how these, you know, Starfleet and Next Generation and Discovery, can't think of anything else, but they have these corruptible officers, bridge crew members, Data for one. There's several episodes in Next Generation where something happens and, you know, Data's like overtaken and he takes the crew on this wild and crazy mission and puts everyone in danger. Same here with Arium, where she gets corrupted and takes this crew and has her own devious plot going on. So it's like, I know it makes for an interesting story, but you think after a couple hundred years and some incidents where these androids or cybernetic humans were causing problems because they were corrupted, you think they would learn, oh, maybe we shouldn't let them be bridge crew members or keep them too involved.
You would think, but
yeah, they want so much inclusion that they risk it at their expense of someone, you know, hacking into Arium and taking the crew on a wild mission that almost gets them killed.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds about the direction we're heading.
Yeah, I just found that interesting. I was doing a lot of tying back with instances where Data went through a similar situation. So, I mean, it is what it is. I think Star Trek like those little tropes.
Yeah, I think they do. But I think that they're trying so hard to reminisce about old scenes instead of creating new ones. Because that's the thing with, you know, they did that a lot in Next Generation, especially the first season of Next Generation. I don't know if you noticed this, but first season of Next Generation is eerily similar to the original series. And then after season three, that's when it starts really branching out and becoming its own show and doing its own thing. And all the other shows kind of did the same thing, but they still connected to each other show. And that's what made them really great, where they connected, but they did their own thing. Where Discovery, it looks like they're just trying to throw in a bunch of old shit just to make you feel reminisced.
They're piggybacking.
Yeah, rather than creating new content.
Yep. How does the episode end? Because I know she gets sucked out into space. She says something about Project Daedalus, which she has to find, but, you know, she gets shot out into space before she can give too much information.
They found out that all the admirals were dead. They found out
all of them, just the Section 31 leadership.
Yeah, well, it turns out they've been dead for weeks, and it turns out that Control has been using holograms to fake images of the admirals, fake the recording of Spock murdering people, and then has been slowly but manipulating Starfleet in Section 31 for a couple of weeks, and it is trying to... from what she explained, what was her name? Arium. So Arium was explaining that she got the data from the Spear that had all of their data and information on artificial intelligence, and was trying to upload all of that information to control, and essentially to have it gain sentience, for it to become sentient.
Skynet.
Yeah, essentially. Really? Oh my gosh. It really is Skynet.
Perfect metaphor. You're welcome.
Yep. And that's what she was trying to do. Yeah, but I was trying to think, onto the sphere.
Is that how it ends, or did Brenham come back to the ship? I don't remember I'm trying to think of the final scene, but I think it's they looking at Brenham as Irium floats off, and then you see Irium's memories of her and her husband who had just eloped, and that's how the episode ends.
Yeah, I think that is. But okay. I had an interesting question. So is this AI control supposed to be related to that intelligent AI that was going to wipe out life in Picard? Because remember those tentacles that were coming out of the probe looked eerily similar to the shit that was coming out of that big-ass wormhole on that planet at the end of Picard.
I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah, I noticed that at the end of the episode, I'm like, that would be better if they somehow managed to connect Picard and Discovery that way. But then I started really thinking about it, like, how much better would it really get? Because, I mean, they're not really great storylines to begin with.
1%.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's 1%. Fair. 1% chance.
So after talking about these episodes, how did you think of them?
They weren't bad.
What did you think of them?
They weren't bad. These were better. There was a lot more humor. You had better character development, story arcs. You got a lot. You know, you got more, or at least I felt more into the episodes, or more drawn into the storyline. So these were definitely a lot better. I have a question, though. What did you think of the actor who played Spock? How do you think he did in his role as Spock?
I like him. Because you can see he's unhinged. He's losing it a little bit. And I think he portrayed what the writers wanted very well. And I think he'll continue to be a good Spock on the new Stranger Worlds show. When that gets made.
Let's see. The actor who plays him is Ethan Peck.
Yeah, I like him. I think he's pretty good. I like him. I like Anson Mount as Pike. And I think we only see number one briefly. I don't remember if we see her in future episodes of Discovery. But I think you got a pretty good cast there for this new show. And I think he did a pretty good job. He sounded logical and stern when he needed to. And he was unhinged at the right times.
But he seems like, I hate to say it, this might just be a little bit nitpicking, but he kind of talks really fast. Like, I don't know, maybe you guys need to go back and watch it, but Spock's a little bit slower when he's talking. He's a little bit more well-articulated. Not that he's not intelligent when he speaks. It's more just a slower pace where he just feels like he's rolling through everything so fast and he's got to get through everything,
and that could just be his mind's going a million miles at once with this whole Red Angel fiasco, and he's lost. You know, he really feels lost, and he's going through all this shit. So he might just be running at a million miles an hour.
Yeah, he could.
I think he's a good actor, and maybe, you know, he's not going to be a spot on mirror image of Leonard Nimoy, but neither was
Zachary Quinto.
Yeah, from the movies.
I hate to say it, I think Benedict Cumberbatch would have made a better Spock in that movie than him playing Khan.
Maybe, but that's not where I'm going.
Yeah, I know, but
you can't be an exact mirror image, or, you know, a carbon copy of Leonard Nimoy. So, will it be perfect? No, but I think he's a good version, and I like him in this. In these three episodes, I like him in season two, and I think I'll like him in Strange New Worlds when that show comes out. Hopefully, by the end of 2021 or the start of 2022.
Hopefully. Let's see.
There's any ETA.
Well, so. I mean, Star Trek's kind of like, it's all up in the air right now.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think they know what the hell they're doing. Production on Star Trek New Worlds appears imminent, according to this headline, which released yesterday. The third original live action Trek series for the soon to be rebranded. Oh, yeah. So they might do it as part of their, you know, new Paramount Plus release. Because I guess
that's what CBS they've already done. Because, yeah,
I think they're going to do it as, yeah, they're going to release the episode as part of their,
Well, CBS All Access is changing its name to Paramount Plus starting March 4th or 5th or something like that. Or 3rd, yeah. Whenever it is. So it's just the rebranding of the streaming service. And I don't see it coming out anytime soon. I mean, we haven't seen a trailer, so we're still at least.
Well, they haven't even started production. The fourth season of Star Trek Discovery went in production last November. Picard is about to start on season 2 soon. And now it looks like the third light of action show is gearing up for shooting as well. So they haven't even started.
And that's unfortunate because I would rather see Strange New Worlds before I see a Discovery season 4 or a Picard season 2.
Peck is in Toronto. Yeah, so the actors are starting to get into the cities to where they're going to film and shoot these, but they haven't started yet.
Okay. Well.
All right. Well, anything else you want to cover in this episode?
No, that's it.
No? All right.
Good set of episodes. Hopefully it keeps the pace up.
Yeah. I'm curious to see where it's going to be. I don't want to say I'm curious. I know where it's going to go because we've seen it, but I'm interested to see if it continues to improve in these last couple episodes or if it's peaked already.
We'll find out.
Yep. I guess we'll find out next time. And so will you guys.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it, kill it.
Punch it.
Punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it,
Hustler!
Punch it!
Punch it! Let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
Well, what do we have to look forward to for next week, brother?
So next week, I think, is part 9 of our discussion. I think today was 8. We're going to talk about episodes 10, 11, and 12. Yeah, because we'll wrap at part 10 with the last two episodes. So next time, we'll be going over episodes 10, 11, and 12 with part 9 of our discussion of Star Trek Discovery. Episode 10 is called The Red Angel. 11 is Perpetual Infinity, and 12 is Through the Valley of the Shadows. So that's what we'll be covering next time on Deep Space High.
Yes, and I never found that episode, that second episode where Pike is in, so I have no idea which one to recommend for you guys. I think it's season 3, though.
Okay.
I don't know. Check out season 3. See if you can find it. I'll look it up. I'll continue to go through it, but it would be good context to have for, going forward for the rest of this season, at least. Because I know it's going to be brought up.
Looks like season 1, episodes 11 and 12 are the ones with Pike.
Isn't 11 and 12? Let me see. Is it 11 and 12? The Enterprise now escapes. Spock. Yeah. I think you're right.
So it took me 2 seconds to figure that out.
No, you are not right. It's 12 and 13.
Okay, it's 11 and 12 because you exclude the pilot. I'm not counting the pilot.
Yeah, well, you got to count the pilot. So check out season 1, episode 12 and episode 13. It's two-parter called the Menagerie part 1 and part 2. Menagerie, okay. All right, well, I guess that'll do it for this episode. Thank you everyone for listening to Deep Space High, and be sure to join us next time as we continue our discussion of Star Trek Discovery.
And don't forget to keep the conversation going with hashtag Deep Space High, hashtag Tacos and Trek. Also, be sure to follow us on Facebook and on Instagram. On Facebook, we are Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Reviews, and over on the Insta is Deep Space High Podcast. If you follow one of those pages, you can stay up to date with our latest announcements.
Yeah, and also please be sure to leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcast, or if you want to leave a review, please feel free to do so. These reviews help, they give us better feedback, gives you guys better experience. And if you guys want to ask us some questions, you can ask them you can ask us some questions there, and we might just answer it on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
And I'm Jedi Master Steve.
Live long and prosper.